You meet all kinds of people in the desert. They come seeking peace, or fortune, or just a little sun in their golden years. But the last person I met, right here in Tucson, that's the one I'll remember. Because that's the person who killed me. All through your life, death follows you like a bird perched over your shoulder. Some people spend their lives running from that bird, and it haunts their every waking hour. But me, I guess I thought death would never catch me. I was wrong.
Michael Dukakis was the guy that walked into the room and everyone's heads would turn. He was a guy who had wild and crazy hair. He had necklaces and bracelets and rings.
Michael was most definitely the kind of boy that marched to his very own drum.
As a yoga teacher, I always believed in karma. A good deed, a comforting touch. They can go a long way in this short life. But I'm not so sure anymore. Because, as it turns out, bad things can happen to good people. Very bad things.
He was the last person that I would imagine would tempt somebody into violence or provoke somebody into a violent act.
We are creatures of habit. Wake up, walk the dog, head to work. Friday, September 26th, should have been no different.
It was reported that there was somebody who possibly had been shot on the front porch of a residence. You want to get there quick because you don't know what's happened. You kind of kick on the lights and sirens and go to it.
That morning, I should have been right in the middle of my sunrise meditations. But instead, I was being visited by Tucson's finest.
I got out of the car, came up to the gate. I could clearly see that there was a body laying there with his head towards me.
The victim lay face up there on the porch right outside the front door. It was very apparent to the first arriving officer that there was a homicide.
Like that.
On the side yard, there was some of his guitars were stacked up. It appeared that in the kitchen there was some type of struggle, broken glass, dishes broken in the sink.
Our gut feeling is the victim came home, interrupted a burglary, and things went bad.
It was all over so quickly. I never had a chance to fight back or a chance to say goodbye.
My telephone rang and it was my boyfriend. And he said to me, I don't know how to tell you this, but I just saw in the news that Michael has been killed.
It was very difficult for us to believe it, that someone would kill him. It was something that we would have never predicted, that another human being would take his life. It just didn't seem to fit at all.
You can spend a lifetime seeking truth, but never find it. And then you die, and it's all so clear. I'd have told the police who killed me if I could. If only it were that easy.
The area where the victim lives is an area that's seen its fair share of burglaries.
Monday morning, I got on the computer and I started running checks in that area of possible burglaries. I was able to come up with a few right off the bat within walking distance of the victim's house. And based on that, I was able to pull information as to an arrest that occurred on Saturday night. Joseph Keyes and David Wynn were arrested on Saturday evening for breaking into a home in which guitars were taken.
I like that. I mean, that's
pretty active burglars in the area.
The fact that guitars were taken by these two suspects and there were guitars stacked up at Michael Dehakis' house was a big flag went up for us.
We really like that lead right now.
Both of them had prior arrest records for other things. Drug priors and theft priors. They fit the profile of a couple of individuals that could be capable of murder as well.
But if Wynn and Keyes had anything to do with my murder, they weren't talking. What the cops needed was some proof.
We were able to find out where they lived, and we obtained a search warrant to enter their residence.
In searching a suspect's home, we're looking primarily for the weapon utilized to murder the victim, any transfer evidence such as blood, any number of those things that could link these suspects to that homicide.
What we did find were some jeans that had some blood on them. So that kind of reinforced the fact that these possibly could be the two that were involved.
My soul may be gone far from this place, but it seems my blood is still in Tucson. And that might just spell trouble for the person who killed me. It can take a lifetime to free yourself from the burdens of the modern world. But sometimes that freedom comes a bit sooner than we hoped.
Two individuals that had been detained the following day, active burglars in the area, were people of interest.
And when police search the guy's house, they find a pair of bloody jeans they're real interested in.
When we found the bloody jeans, of course, we were somewhat excited, kind of reinforcing our thought process there that these guys could be involved in this death. We gather the evidence, we take it back to the crime lab and put a request in for testing.
But modern science has a way of bringing our highest hopes down to reality.
What looked to be like blood to us as detectives turned out not to be blood. It was some type of other material or chemicals.
You have two individuals detained who you feel are responsible for this homicide. And that doesn't pan out. You have to start all over again. It can be demoralizing.
Those boys, they had their demons, but they didn't kill me. It's strange, but my death came in a much more familiar face.
We're trying to get a lot of background information on the victim, what he was like, whether or not anybody had a grudge against him, anybody upset with him.
Michael had a lot of wisdom about him. And outside of his class, he was a regular guy. I would never believe that Michael had any enemies.
As far as we were able to gather, he got along with everybody and there were really no problems in his life.
But I guess sometimes trouble just has a way of finding you.
Michael loved women. He was a magnet. So he always had women around him because he taught yoga and most of his students were women.
Young, flexible women. It's one of the perks of the yoga life. But this year, I had my eye on one in particular.
I knew very little about Amber. I knew that she was Michael's girlfriend, but it was an on and off relationship.
Amber Trudell had been in my class for over a year, and she was my favorite student.
Michael was in his 40s, and you know she was in her mid to late 20s, so It was kind of nice for him to be dating a younger woman.
But it wasn't in my nature to be tied down.
She wanted to marry him. She would constantly bring that up. You know, Michael, why don't you marry me? And he would just kind of laugh it off, said, I've been married too many times. I don't want to get married again.
What Amber and I had was special. It was also a secret. Because little Amber already had a husband.
If it's a matter where it's a lover's triangle, he caught her with Michael, it could very well be the guy who, fit of rage, shot and killed Michael.
A wise man once said, the best love affairs are the ones we never have. I wish I learned that before I met Amber Trudell and her husband. In the desert, there's danger around every turn. You learn at an early age to keep your distance. But I was always a curious boy. Maybe that's why I got involved with a married woman like Amber Trudell.
Upon finding out that Michael Dukakis had a girlfriend and who happened to be married, it brings back that energy to the investigation.
I talked it over with my partners, and right away we were concerned that there might be some type of triangle in this situation.
They went out there to look for the husband. This guy could possibly be the guy to pull the trigger.
But Amber's husband wasn't the kind to hang around and wait for the police.
Amber's boss called me to say that she had just driven by Amber's house and saw Justin, her husband, and another individual were loading things into the moving truck. I immediately thought that these people were involved in the death of Michael Dukakis and they were trying to get away. Based on that information, we have to act quickly. We were able to surround the house, make sure that there were no avenues of escape, and then move in. Right away, it was discovered that Justin had a gun on him. Thought at that time was that this possibly could be the murder weapon.
If that's what you're waiting for, that's the break that you need.
Justin and Amber had married young. He wasn't really the yoga type.
In the interview room with him, he was acting nervous. I immediately thought that he was more than capable of being a murderer. Justin tells me that he's out of town on Thursday night, the night that we feel that Michael was murdered early Friday morning. He felt that his wife needed to get away, so he drove her to the mountains where his parents lived up in Pine Top, Arizona. So right away, he's telling me that he has an alibi. I contact his parents in the Pine Top area, and they tell me that, yeah, Justin was here.
Justin never gave me good vibes, but he was telling the truth. If I was killed over a broken heart, I don't think it was Justin's.
And in my interview with Justin, I asked him, you had a weapon on you. It's a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. What about your wife? Does she carry a weapon as well? Oh, yeah, she has a 38 special she always carries in her purse.
I've always been a lover, not a fighter. But Amber, she was always packing. And if cops want to find her, I'd suggest they check out one of her old haunts, an old hotel just outside of town.
I first met her at the door of her hotel room, and she was somewhat defensive, somewhat hostile. I mean, when asking her where the gun was, where is it, Amber? It's not in your purse. Where's the gun? I don't know. Is it in the truck? I don't know.
Losing your car keys is one thing, but losing your gun? Come on now.
You're going to be a suspect until I can eliminate you.
What does that mean, I'm a suspect?
In the death of Michael Dukakis.
Her alibi to us was that she, on Thursday morning, did not go to work and left to go to the mountains with her husband to visit her husband's parents.
That house that
I wasn't here on Friday, though, and people can verify that.
We know that Michael died on early Friday morning, late Thursday night. She's gone on Thursday, so we're somewhat confused as to why she's acting the way she is if she's out of town. If she's out of town, she's got an alibi.
She might have an alibi, but an affair, a murder, and a missing gun, these aren't things police here in Arizona take lightly.
we're looking confident that certainly Amber is involved in this, but without a murder weapon, without more physical evidence, we're thinking, wow, you know, it's going to be a challenging task to really get there.
The very next morning, I meet with the medical examiner and say, is there any possibility that we're off? You know, we find him on Friday morning. We think he's killed either early Friday morning, late Thursday night. Can we be off a day or so? When the medical examiner examined Michael at the scene, Michael was warm to the touch.
If a body is found still warm and the limbs still loose, one would expect the death to have occurred probably within the past couple of hours.
But that isn't always the case, especially with the Arizona sun beating down on you.
Rigor mortis is a very inexact way of determining time of death because there are many factors that influence how rapidly it diminishes.
We both felt that we could shift our timeline to Michael dying a day earlier.
Which means Amber no longer has an alibi.
At this point, we know that Amber and Justin went out of town on Thursday morning in a hurry. We also know that they both have guns. The circumstantial evidence is strong at that point.
My killer's secret was safe with me. I even took it to the grave. But something tells me it won't stay buried forever. I left this life on a Wednesday night, but they didn't find my body until Friday. Not even a blink of an eye in eternity. But for my killer, what a difference a day makes.
The evidence that would seal the fate of Amber is, short of a confession, the actual weapon that was used to kill the victim.
Amber claims she lost that gun of hers. But luckily, the cops aren't the only ones who've been keeping an eye on my former student.
I get a call from Amber's father-in-law a few days later. He says, you know, I was thinking, I'm an ex-cop. The weekend that Amber was here, she was out wandering in the backyard at times, and that was so unusual for her. So he went walking around the area where he saw Amber walking, and behind a woodshed, he saw a little pile of rocks and moved the rocks and found that a gun was buried underneath the rocks. It was a .38 special, the same gun that Justin described Amber having in her purse.
The desert sun can make us all go a little insane, but eventually, it brings everything into the light.
We immediately drive the weapon back to Tucson. We drive straight to the crime lab the next morning, and we give it to one of our crime lab specialists. And within minutes, we know that that's the gun that fired the bullet to kill Michael.
That's what we needed, the murder weapon. It's the greatest feeling to be able to come to those people's, the victim's family and say, hey, look, the person who shot your loved one is now in custody.
When I was 14, I saved my best friend from drowning. But that day in the courtroom, I thought I'd let Amber seal her own fate.
She describes the incident as an accident. She's fighting and arguing with Michael at his house, and somehow or another, the gun comes out of her purse. Michael grabs it, and he accidentally put it to his forehead and shot himself.
But that isn't really what happened the night I died, is it, Amber? Don't you remember how we went out drinking with a couple of friends after yoga class?
And I think she maybe had 3 or 4 shots in the span of 1 hour, tequila shots. And she just kept on this, he doesn't love me, he doesn't love me, he doesn't want to marry me. You know, tell him to go marry me, Eli.
I tried to explain that marriage wasn't in my cosmic plan, but the heart isn't as limber as the body. If you push it too far, it's liable to break.
They went back home to Michael's house, and I believe they had an argument. There was evidence of struggle. There was plates and dishes that were broken in the sink.
A lover's quarrel can take a dark turn, especially when a gun is involved.
Amber put the gun right up to his forehead and shot him, right there on the porch.
We, the jury, do find the defendant, Amber Lynn Trudell, guilty of murder.
She was a jealous woman. She wanted to change Michael. Michael didn't want anything to do with that. Michael was Michael.
And one thing I've learned is that even when you're dead, you're not really gone.
A lot of times I sense that he's sitting somewhere here in the yard. One of his yoga friends told me that Mikey had the most incredible touch of the hand. And that's what I feel, that somebody has just touched my back.
There's an order to the universe, and everything has its place. I guess mine is right here in the sandy ground of Tucson, Arizona. And Amber? Her place is in a 6x8 cell